everyone, Neil Matoya. Thank you for downloading the latest episode of the Indian Startup Show. So today I speak to Neil Kashinath. He's the founder and CEO of Applied Singularity. Applied Singularity is a platform for Internet of Things and artificial intelligence. They provide consultations to developers, students, startups, industry, investors, policymakers on the subjects of IoT and AI. Starting 4 years ago, they are now the largest IoT-focused meetup platform in the world. Amazing stuff. So in this podcast, we talk about how it's going so far, the IoT scene in India, his favorite IoT projects, connected cars, teleportation, cloning, robots in the kitchen, and also automatic roti and dosa making machines, and much, much more. So please enjoy the show. Thank you.
Hi, Neil. Thanks for coming on the Indian Startup Show today.
Thanks, Neil. Thanks for having me here.
Excellent. Please tell the listeners what you're doing, please.
So I run a company called Applied Singularity. It is a platform for IoT and AI professionals. That's Internet of Things and artificial intelligence.
Excellent. And when did you get this started and how did you get the idea?
So, we actually started about 4 years ago. It was in 2013, actually on June 11th of 2013, so almost exactly 4 years ago. We started off because I was looking at the Internet of Things. It seemed like something very interesting, but when I tried to speak to people about it, not many here in India had actually heard about it in my own circle. So then I thought, okay, let me see if I can just reach out to the larger community and see where it goes from there. So I created a meetup group. It used to be called IoT Bangalore or IoT BLR for short. And we started it off. I got to meet a couple of interesting people who actually were able to educate me a little bit more about the Internet of Things. And as we started to do we started to host more events and workshops and hackathons and the sort. We saw that, there was a lot of interest that was generated in the community. We do believe that the singularity is inevitable, technology will advance to such a stage that it becomes comparable or maybe even more intelligent than humans. But what we're saying is, how do we take all of that and apply it to things that matter to us? So it's not necessarily going to be an end of the world kind of a scenario. It's not going to be humans versus machines. It's going to be humans with machines. Mm-hmm. So that was the idea behind Applied Singularity.
Cool.
But while we were doing all of this, we realized that the largest gap in India right now for this is actually the talent gap. Mm-hmm. We see that there are not many people with the necessary skills to build out right now even simple systems, but as we go along more complex systems, it's going to be harder if there isn't enough talent. So currently that's our main focus, to try and build out talent in the space.
Mm-hmm. So what are your favorite IoT projects then, would you say?
Oh, that's hard to choose a specific one. There are a lot of really interesting ones. I think right now some of the best solutions that we've seen, which just in terms of impact, have actually been in the healthcare space. The things that IoT has made possible, just easing people's lives. We've seen a couple of people work on smart insulin pens, which actually can track whether insulin has been taken for that day or not, and also how much. So that really, it helps people who are struggling with diabetes and who have, who take insulin shots multiple times a day. Sometimes it's very easy to forget if you've taken a shot or not. And in those situations with this kind of a smart insulin pen, it's just as simple as looking it up on your app to see if you actually took it for the day or not. Plus, it has other things like, data over time is going to be very important. It could also take care of very small things like, let's say you're about to forget the pen at home and you're stepping out. It could actually just send you a reminder through a connected leash or a digital leash. So a lot of simple things that, that make a world of difference to people struggling with particular healthcare issues, which IoT can actually solve.
What would you say is like the IoT scene like in India at the moment then?
It's really improved over the last year. I remember when we first started off, like I said, I couldn't find anybody in my friend circle who could talk to me about IoT. There was so much scope, but then really nothing was happening here. The situation was, it was very quiet about 4 years ago. But since then, there's been a tremendous increase in visibility for IoT. Today, we have a lot of large organizations, including quasi-governmental organizations that are helping push this forward. The government of India itself has been very proactive in adopting IoT and things like smart cities, in education, So they have been encouraging, the inclusion of IoT in engineering schools, all of those things. So I think on that front, there's been a lot of movement at the grassroots levels. Additionally, there are a lot of startups that have now come up in this space. It's definitely difficult for startups to kind of, you know, make a mark here. Typically, startups in the IoT space would require, you know, for them to get to market with a fairly complex hardware plus software solution would take at least $100,000 to $200,000 just to get the first batch out there. So it's definitely more challenging, but we're also seeing that the environment and the ecosystem is stepping up to it. There are a lot more maker spaces now, which have the necessary equipment. There are a lot more companies that, you know, have been involved in the testing and certification process that are opening their doors to startups and coming out with startup-friendly, pricing. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of accelerators and incubators specifically focused on IoT that have mushroomed in India. Mm-hmm. Plus, there are accelerators from across the world that are actually coming down to Bangalore to look for startups here. And we've seen, you know, two or three generations of, startup batches come out now. And it looks very promising. Mm-hmm.
So when you do the meetups, what's like the most common questions then they ask you about IoT and AI as well?
Yeah. So, it varies. So IoT and AI are both very, very broad spaces. So when we are doing a meetup, we typically try and center it around either a particular topic. So it could be retail, it could be connected cars, it could be anything else. Mm-hmm. Or we might do it around a specific technology. So it might be, you know, Bluetooth low energy or, a new prototyping board that has come out. It could be any of those things. Yesterday, in fact, we did one with Google on TensorFlow. Mm-hmm. And how people can, start using TensorFlow to build out their solutions. So the kind of questions vary, but I think largely there are many people who are at the idea stage are still looking for ways to validate their ideas. So they do have a specific, product or service in mind, and they want to know if we see there's a large enough market for it. Mm-hmm. That's on one hand of it, but of course at the other end of the spectrum, there are, I think funding is definitely a fairly large challenge for both these companies because of just, you know, the newness of it all. While neither IoT nor AI are extremely new, I think the real commercial interest has only happened in the last 1 to 2 years here in India. So not a whole lot of investors, whether angel or VC, are yet very comfortable with all of this. So we do get a lot of questions from startups that are further down the track asking about how they can communicate value proposition to these investors.
So you mentioned connected cars. I mean, what would the future like for connected cars regarding IoT and AI?
There's a lot of stuff that could happen with connected cars. Obviously, tracking what is happening in the engine, what is, you know, the entire predictive maintenance part of it, that's one side of it. And then the autonomous driving is definitely such a large game changer in terms of safety, in terms of convenience. So starting to see all of those, but I think this new business models also will be possible with these things. So
in terms of jobs, then will people be losing the jobs? Would you say?
Well, initially, probably a couple of jobs which are low-end jobs, which are more easily automated, are probably going to go away. But in some sense, a lot of these worries are similar to, you know, the worries that were there during the Industrial Revolution, that, you know, the machines or the automated systems will take over. The reality, I think, would be a little different. What happens is, you know, if you look at, take for example, a simple Excel sheet, right? I'm sure when it first came in, a lot of people who were doing accounts by pen and paper were worried that, you know, they wouldn't be needed any longer. But it was actually the reverse that was true. Once they kind of learned how to use these, they could do their work a lot faster, which meant they could start to get more clients, which meant their business grew, which meant they hired more people to actually satisfy those business requirements. So I think something similar will happen here. As people get a little bit more used to working with intelligent systems and they're able to kind of make sense of, you know, all the heavy lifting that this has done, and it has given them, high-level summaries of things, I think they will be able to do a lot more. Also, bear in mind that, you know, right now, a lot of the intelligent systems are not that intelligent in the sense that, you know, they're great to move things from zero to about 70%, 80%. In very few areas, you know, they've actually gone up to, like, you know, 95% accuracy or 95% efficiency. So in a lot of instances, we see that you still need a human to be there to take it from 70% to 95% or to be able to kind of take subjective calls in a lot of cases. It's just that they will now be able to do a lot more because they're not doing the lower end task of going from zero to 70%, but actually just kind of taking a call on the more difficult things. So the way I see it, I think a lot of employees now, their efficiency or the productivity improved by about 5x, which means that not a lot of them will get, you know, will get replaced, but definitely a lot of them need to get reskilled.
Excellent. So you did a TEDx talk. What was that like?
It was a very interesting experience. I was talking on the future of technology and how technology can, you know, at a very, very high level, I touched upon about 10 to 15 different industries and gave an example or two each on how things would change in the future. And of course, it was all leading to the singularity that we think is inevitable.
So you talked about like teleportation and like cloning and stuff like that. I mean, is that possible, would you say?
Well, I certainly hope it happens at some point and hope it happens during our lifetime because I'd love to experience some of those. But I think some of those, they're futuristic. They're I think maybe something like the Neuralink that's coming up. There's a fair amount of research going on right now in universities as well as with some of the companies like what Elon Musk is doing, where we hope to see the interfacing between the humans and the machines. Well, specifically, I would say the brain-computer interface. Mm-hmm. As those parts start to improve, as those technologies start to become more viable, I think that's where we'll start to see all of these things. You know, like we said, teleportation, for example. One of the things that we talked about is, if you can upload your mind and also be able to download your mind or your consciousness or whichever way that you want to look at it, that's actually what makes teleportation possible, because you upload your mind to the internet or to the cloud. Sitting here in Bangalore, I could download it within minutes, somewhere in the, let's say, the US, into another body or another container, so to speak. And that essentially is teleportation. But of course, it's only teleportation if we can actually merge those things back. So it's not about making a copy of myself somewhere else, but rather, you know, when I actually finish whatever it is that I had to do in the US, I'm able to send all of that back and merge it back with the original body here in Bangalore. So that's, you know, it's a theoretical idea, but the rate at which, you know, research is proceeding and to see, you know, financial commitments being made to a lot of this research is very encouraging.
Excellent. Interesting stuff. Also in terms of agriculture, because obviously India has a massive farming industry, you know, what can we expect in farming, would you say?
Farming is a place where, you know, there are a lot of inefficiencies kind of built in. You're heavily dependent on, you know, the climate, heavily dependent on, you know, the quality of the seeds and, of course, how you actually do the farming process itself. So I think that it really lends itself well to automation of different sorts and, you know, using of intelligence to make better decisions. So one of the things that we've been talking about is, in some sense, software-controlled farming. Right. So what happens is in a kind of either a greenhouse or essentially an automated system where you can control various elements like moisture content, light, temperature, all of those things. Essentially, what happens is for a particular seed or a particular variety of a seed, you could have, you know, the best optimal conditions actually published by the seed manufacturer, right? Whoever distributes the seeds to you also distributes a software specification sheet, which then controls this entire automated farmland or automated greenhouse to control exactly what would be the right kind of environment for that for the plant to grow well. And tomorrow, if you decide that, you know, there's been a better iteration or there's been more research and so there's a better type of a seed at a slightly different conditions, it's nothing more than a software patch that actually has been given along with the new seed. And so that's how I think, you know, a lot of the farming will become much, much more efficient, less reliance on, you know, pesticides and all of those things, and the equivalent of more organic farming made through technology.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So let's talk about the home then. So obviously there's so many IoT examples, like robots. I mean, would they be like taking over like kitchens and things like that, would you say?
Yeah, sure thing. You know, well, people, there are some people who love to cook, mm-hmm. but for most of the people, it's just another chore. They have to do that work because they got to eat. And I think that is something that could very easily be outsourced to machines. Mm-hmm. So today with, in India itself, what we're seeing is there are a lot of these, you know, food tech companies, so to speak, which basically do delivery of food from restaurants. Such a huge spike in the usage of these apps, food delivery apps. It is because people don't really want to cook. They don't have the time or they don't have the patience, and they just want to order food and, you know, just get ready to eat food. Of course, it's not very healthy all the time. And depending on where you're ordering it from, it could be bad ingredients. It could be, you know, just badly cooked, all of those things. Wouldn't it be a lot nicer if you could have control over all of those things at home and just the same process? You have an app. You pick whatever you want, and then the machine actually cooks it for you. We're starting to see some parts of this already happen, like the low-lying fruits. The low-hanging fruits here are actually things like rotis are a big part of the Indian diet. Mm-hmm. It's there. It's made pretty much with almost every meal. Very easy to automate that part. And there's this company called Rotimatic, which has actually gone ahead and done that. So you just put in the ingredients, and then you specify on your app, you know, how many rotis you want and, you know, of what quality or texture, and it will actually make it for you and keep it ready. So similar to that, we're also seeing a couple of startups working on different staples of the Indian diet. So there's a Dosa-matic already. There are some people looking at how do you automate curry making. So we're starting to see a whole lot of interesting things. So I think if you have about three or four different, you know, systems at home, mm-hmm. you probably have enough to cover like 80% of your meals.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good to me. In terms of the main players, then obviously you've got Amazon, Google, Apple, all trying to get into the home connectivity market. Who's going to win that? You know, who's best placed to win that? Who's leading the way, as it were?
Right now, it feels like Amazon has, with Alexa and with the Echo, have a pretty good lead. And we also see a lot of developers getting onto that platform. Mm-hmm. But now with the recent announcement, you know, from Apple and from Google, everybody's come out with their own Alexa equivalents. And so I think we'll see that space really heating up. Definitely, there's so much information, so much additional information that comes from the home mm-hmm. that... for a lot of these companies for whom data is the largest currency, you know, nobody wants to let go of that. So I think they've got, at the personal level, they've got, you know, how people interact and all of that stuff, but they're not, a lot of it is missing from the context of what happens in the home. Mm-hmm. And that's where, you know, these large push from each of the big companies into controlling the home.
Excellent. Actually, what's your view on 3D printing? It's been around for a long time now. It doesn't seem to be taken up, mm-hmm. would you say? I mean... Why do you think that is?
Yeah, 3D printing, you know, the promise of it is very, very enticing. It's currently quite, it's quite basic mm-hmm. in terms of, you know, the quality of the output that you get. And if it's, you know, if it isn't a very advanced system, then it becomes too expensive. So that's been one of the challenges. But I think for the initial prototyping, for the initial proofs of concept that we need to build, it's actually been a very wonderful tool. It helps to kind of, before you actually make large investments in, you know, building out a case or building out, you know, a specific design, very easy to actually try it out once with just 3D printing and then, you know, make whatever changes that you want, do a couple of iterations and then finally make that large investment. So specifically for IoT devices and, you know, of course our connected hardware, pretty much all of them need some sort of casing. And that's where 3D printing has made quite a difference to the development process. But in terms of, you know, do consumers just have 3D printers at home, the way that, you know, today you might have a lot of you know, printers and scanners for your computer system at home because it's just easy. You might want to print your photographs, but that has not yet happened with 3D printing, at least here in India. But there's, once again, there's a lot of development happening in the space. There's companies are bringing out, you know, higher quality printers. The costs are reducing. So I think it should reach a stage where it will be fairly easy to go out and just get something printed. And of course, the other issue is that it just takes so long to print something nowadays. It gets quite tiring. Just waiting for it. And if something goes wrong, you know, you have to start from first. You can't really recover from a lot of those things that go wrong. So, but hopefully we will see a lot of these things get resolved. And then we should see it with all sorts of new kinds of applications for it. For example, 3D printing of clothes. Now, that might be something very interesting. And then, you know, 3D printing of electronics. In some sense, not just the outer casing for things, but integrating the electronics within the 3D printing process so that you have a system that is working out of the box.
Mm-hmm. So. What about houses, though? Can you do, like, 3D print of a house or something? I don't know.
Yeah, I think people have started to do that now. Essentially, you know, kind of printing out blocks by blocks at the venue. So, for example, we heard that I think the Red Cross itself is looking at how can you use 3D printing at disaster sites. Mm-hmm. You don't really have a lot of tools. You can't really carry a lot of things with you when you're going there. So why not just take a 3D printer along, take along the material, and then, you know, whatever that you need, just print it out there at the disaster site. You know, for whatever you need. So there are some very interesting pilots going on in some of these spaces. It'd be interesting to see how they actually pan out in the long run.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned lots of software and applications and TensorFlow, etc. How do you keep on top of things?
I think right now our community actually serves that purpose for us. In our Facebook group, we had about 18,000 people on our IoT BLR group, but of course now that group is being archived and moved to a new group called Applied Singularity. Mm-hmm. And so there we are, you know, a lot of people who keep reading about this, about all of these things, they find something interesting and they come and they post it to our group. So it we kind of get a curated feed from some of the people already reading up about this stuff. So that is one space. But then, you know, even a simple Google alert actually works very well for us.
So do you do workshops then? So you actually have the equipment in your workshop, as it were?
Yes. We do workshops from time to time, typically in partnership with some makerspace that has all the equipment that would be required.
And what's the turnout? What's the feedback like?
No, it's been very good. I think people have been keen to start learning about these things. So, for example, we recently did a quick poll for anybody who wanted to pre-register for our upcoming platform. And there we saw that, you know, of all the things that we do, events and, you know, talks and workshops, hackathons, job searches, all of those things, workshops actually listed right on top. That was the thing that most people wanted right now. I think with most new technologies that are coming in, yes, there is interest, but then people want to see how they can kind of get hands-on with it. And so that's the role that these workshops play. We do typically a 4-hour to 8-hour workshop. Rarely it also goes up to, you know, a couple of days, depending on the topic at hand. Mm-hmm. But I think we do about 40 to 50 people per workshop. Mm-hmm. Kind of becomes harder to handle larger classes than that. But, you know, at the peak, we've done about 250 people at a time in a workshop. Mm-hmm. But I think the right size is about 40 to 50 people.
Mm-hmm. So you've got the most popular IoT meetup in the world, right?
Yeah, it's the largest IoT meetup group worldwide.
What does that feel like then? When you first started it, and now you've got the biggest one in the world?
It actually feels quite good. But well, in some sense, that was never really the aim for us. It kind of just happened on its own. What we were trying to do was make sure that there are enough products being built here in India. And, you know, so it was about helping startups. It was about helping developers, trying to, you know, give them the resources and the opportunities that they needed, and just trying to move the needle here in our country. So in that sense, I think, yes, it's been successful in terms of, you know, getting the attention of the government and getting the government also kind of more involved. A lot of the initiatives that the government starts from Bangalore, like the NASSCOM IoT Center of Excellence, all of that. It's going to be pan-India, but it started from Bangalore because we had already built a large catchment of people interested in IoT. But having said that, I think, you know, I mean, yes, we did become the largest group about a year ago. But It's not a very significant thing because, you know, when you're talking about the largest group here, it's still about 12,000 people, which is a pretty small number compared to like all the apps that have, you know, 100,000 downloads or a million downloads. That 12,000 seems like a small number. Mm-hmm. What I would still like to do is see what these 12,000 people can do, you know, and support them in building out really good startups and have more products come out, live products that are actually getting deployed and solutions that are making a difference to industry and to health. So there, I think we're still lacking a little bit. There's quite some distance to go.
Mm-hmm. Actually, last couple of questions then. What's your view on Bitcoin then? Because that seems to be going quite well at the moment.
I'm not very familiar with that space. It's, you know, it's had its ups and downs. Some time ago, you know, people started writing it off and say, you know, the death of Bitcoins. And there were a couple of, you know, the exchanges disappearing overnight and taking all the money with them. So all of that stuff happened. But there seems to be a resurgence in the more, you know, in the more recent past. So, but of course, with that, we're also seeing that, you know, it's also open to a lot of thefts. So there have been hacking where, you know, the wallets were just cleared out and nobody could trace it. Nobody knew where it went. So in that sense, it kind of feels like a little bit like the Wild West. Yeah, you had these banks and then these bank robbers would come in and they'd just take stuff away. It kind of feels like that, but all happening in the digital space.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. So if someone's listening to this, what's the easiest way to get started in IoT? Obviously, go to your meetup, but then after that.
Yeah, I think, well, the easiest way, actually, if you're looking at IoT, is to just get started off with very basic electronics. I think the Arduino prototyping board is a very good place to start. It's simple, it's versatile, and it makes it really easy to just learn the basics of electronics in a very non-threatening way. And then, of course, you know, there are multiple areas of IoT, so everything from, you know, just the software side to just the hardware side, and to the, you know, the interplay between the two. So any of those are, you know, good areas to pick and go a little bit deeper into. It's almost impossible for any one person to be an expert across the entire, you know, even if you just take a single device, the entire stack, so to speak. So including hardware and software. So I think a good way to start is, you know, just start small, start with the Arduino. And as you get a little bit more into it, you'll start to figure out what are the things that you need to add. Do you need to add Wi-Fi? Do you need to add Bluetooth? What kind of power requirements do you want? So all of those things will slowly fall into place. And one of the, you know, I guess, you know, apart from just a workshop or a tutorial on something like the Arduino, a very good way to get hands-on and to learn really rapidly is to take up a project. Mm-hmm. Just pick a project, you know, any topic of your choice. It doesn't have to be, you know, you don't have to save the world with this project. You don't have to, this project does not have to turn into your eventual startup. Just pick something that's fun. And get started off. You'll learn the same. By the time you're done with the first project, you'll get ideas for second, third, fourth projects. Collaborate with more people. I think especially with IoT and AI, it's very important to collaborate with people because it's just that nobody really knows the entire, you know, the length and breadth of it. So everybody brings in their own expertise. It's more fun to collaborate and, you know, kind of learn new things and bring your different parts together and make it work.
What are you working on right now then?
We are currently building out a platform for Internet of Things and artificial intelligence professionals. So while we've been very active on, you know, Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn and Meetup, we've also realized that as we've kind of grown, these platforms are not necessarily scaling to meet our requirements in terms of communication, in terms of understanding who our audience is, and, you know, creating opportunities for different audience groups in different locations. So that's been our main focus now. We're trying to bring out a platform that will help people learn in the first place about, you know, IoT and AI, which means a lot of online courses, which means a lot of workshops. We're also using this as a channel to publicize our events and to invite people to come in for different workshops. And like I said, projects is a fairly important part of it. So what we try and do is announce like a project list or a couple of interesting projects and invite people to come in and start working on those. And, you know, that also, once you have this platform, we'll also be able to facilitate the matching of different people who want to work on a similar project so that they can all kind of get together and work on it. And eventually it will also go on towards creating a resource pool for jobs or for commercial projects that might be coming out. So a lot of these things are planned for the next 1 to 2 months. We are also planning a conference specifically for developers and CTOs in the artificial intelligence space. So right now we're in talks with some of the big companies like Google and NVIDIA and Amazon, Microsoft, all these guys to see if they'd like to participate in this. And so that should probably happen a little bit later this year. And if that happens, then it's going to be very workshop focused. So we'll try and introduce the offerings from each of these companies and get people hands-on with all of them. So we're hoping that at least, in those 2 days, we have about 300 to 400 people who now know one or two different platforms and how they can start to build out AI solutions using these.
Okay, last question then. For people who want more information on you and your meetup, what must they do? How do they connect?
So the first thing is, you can just go to our website. It's www.appliedsingularity.com. And this is, of course, it's just a place where you can pre-register for the platform that will come up in about a month or two. But apart from that, you can also go to our meetup group, meetup.com/appliedsingularity, where you will once again get access to all of the events and workshops that are happening. And then also search for us on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. It's just Applied Singularity. You can search on all these places. And that would be a way to kind of stay in touch with us. And definitely reach out. We are always open to interacting with our community members and to look at new opportunities. If you're looking for jobs, if you have openings in companies and you want to recruit for it, if you have a project in mind, a prototype that you need built, or if you want to build such prototypes, just feel free to reach out to us and we'll try and match you up.
That's awesome, Nihal. Thanks for coming on the show today. Much appreciated.
Thank you, Neil. It's been fun.
Excellent.
Thank you so much for this
Good
opportunity.
Good luck, mate. Cheers now. Thanks, mate. Thanks, Vinny, for coming on the show today. That is the end of the show. If you liked it, please leave a rating and review of the show. Just search for The Indian Startup Show on iTunes, Stitcher, and Overcast. We're also on Pocket Cast, Downcast, Instacast, Pocket Cast, and Apple TV. The Indian Startup Show has over 200,000 listeners, so thank you for your support. If you're building something exciting, please send me an email, hello@neilpatel.co, tweet @IndianStartupSH, go to facebook.com/IndianStartupShow. I'll love to connect. Thank you and goodbye.